Hello and welcome to That Guy's a Maniac, the podcast DS. We are a podcast about video games. My name is Richie and with me as always is Farley, aka Kunzy11, who will say hello and explain why we're called DS this season and tell you where to find us on the internets.
Hello, I'm Kunzy11. This is That Guy's a Maniac, DS, the radio show. And we called it DS because, like the Nintendo DS console, they released some games which had a subtitle with D and S in them. For example, Bakumatsu Renka Shinzagumi DS. Bakumatsu Renka. Shinzagumi DS.
Shinzagumi DS, yeah. But what is the DS? Oh,
is a better one. It's DS. Battle Spirits Digital Starter.
Digital Starter?
Yeah.
I thought you said Spirits. Digital Startup, like some people that are working in Shoreditch or something like that.
No.
Oh.
Pokemon clan, I imagine. And so as a consequence of this, podcast has two halves, but before we get onto that, you can find our stuff at www.thatguys.co.uk and at thatguysamaniac on some of the socials. Before this season began, we filled a big bag with words beginning with a D and another big bag with words beginning with S. And at the beginning of every episode, we pick a random letter and then that's from each bag and that's what the episode's about. Richie, here's a bag of D.
Okay, I'm just going to have a quick rumble in the bag of
rumble,
D's.
Rummage.
And oh, okay, I got one.
Yeah,
it says dancers.
Okay, I'm gonna rummage. Oh, this is weird. This one says questions.
So is that the word questions but with an S in front of it?
Yeah.
Okay,
dancers. Questions, dancers.
Questions and dancers. Okay, maybe.
That does sound like questions and answers.
Maybe we could revisit our season two? Three? Season three thing.
One of our previous season things.
Where we would ask questions and answers. We wouldn't ask answers.
Yeah.
Would you ask answers?
We ask answers.
Yeah.
We answer questions.
No, indeed.
We ask answers. Whatever. Yes. This is our patented. We ask each other a bunch of seemingly random questions. It's been way too long answering them.
Yeah. Far too long. Well, yeah. We don't know. We might just get a simple yes or no.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully the question isn't yes or no.
That's a great question. Okay, Farley, yes or question. No?
Yes or no?
I don't know. Like, there's a lot of pros for yes. There's a lot of cons for no. Interestingly enough, the word no is in the word con.
The word yes is not in the word pro.
No.
I feel like there's a pressure to say yes a lot of the time, you know, as a more positive response.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Although no can also be positive as well.
No, absolutely. But how many yeses have you given out which have definitely been, yeah, sure, I'll get to that, never.
Quite a few, imagine. Yeah. There's been more yeses which I wish had been no's, and yes. I think there are fewer no's than I wish had been yeses. From me.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, which is a tough one. I'm finding it difficult.
Farley, do you want to make a podcast?
No.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, gun to your head, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. think I'm also going to go yes, actually.
I think there's more to be gained from a yes.
There is. Yes, a yes is a promise of adventure. A yes is getting outside the comfort zone.
This, I can't believe we've spent so long talking about yes or no.
And a no is a closed door. A no is a...
No is a closed door with a hope of a different opportunity.
A no is a opportunity unexplored.
Yep.
But a no can also be self-care.
Yep.
There we go, listeners, readers. The yeses have it.
It's all about the yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right, so let's just jump into the actual beef of beef. Jump into the beef. What a great metaphor. Farley, you jumping into the beef of the podcast.
Yes. Yes, with a plomb.
Plomb.
Yes, with a plomb.
Plomb. Okay. Plomb being the exclamation mark above a Sim's head. Or it's not an exclamation mark, it's a...
It's a diamond.
Diamond.
It's like a double-ended diamond.
Double-ended diamond. Yeah. Okay. You go first. Ask me a question.
Okay. Sim City or The Sims?
So, Sim City, top-down god game. Sims, people. I actually, you know what? Have you played any of the latest latest? What's the word I'm looking for? Good God, do a podcast, Richie. Know the words. Have you played the latest? Sims games. I'm struggling with language, to be honest, which is really great. The latest latest in the series of The Sims.
Jeez, do I need to phone an ambulance? Is it?
There's definitely a word I'm looking for and I've lost it. But
it's fine happening.
Yeah. Have you played any of the latest iterations of The Sims games?
Listen, the last Sims game I played was The Sims Deluxe.
Okay, so you didn't even go Sims 2.
Back in 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. My computer could barely handle it, but you could painstakingly add your own textures to things if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And there was like online archives that you could download skins and stuff like that for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you had that really creepy viewer. Where you see the kind of wrapped texture flat.
Yes. Really horrible. Just like someone had been run over by a steamroller.
Yeah.
No, that is definitely a thing. I enjoyed Sims 1 and Sims 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was played a lot. I spent a lot of time recreating the Resident Evil 1 mansion.
Yeah, I remember that.
And finding out that it was completely unlivable because it was too big.
It's not just the zombies running around.
There was no zombies. That was the thing. I just straight up made that.
Do you remember if it was actually possible in terms of the layout, or was it non-Euclidean space dimension?
No, it was actually possible.
Okay.
Like,
you know, they weren't like, hang on, this room would be in this corridor if they were at the scale which you see in the game.
Well, I mean, I did it based on the maps.
I remember. You print out the maps or something.
I wrote them in pen. So I had the Resident Evil guide in a little sort of novel sized book.
Yeah.
I then scaled them up and put them onto A4 size pages. And I had them in pen, and I had like red pen for doors. I had like little notes beside each one that had keys and stuff like that. I don't do that sort of level of immersion in games anymore.
No.
No.
Back when you had hopes and dreams.
Yeah, yeah. And time. Remember time?
Time. I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Right. Let's not get too down. So I haven't played any more of the Sims games. I know Sims 4 is free base game, and then there's like a million different expansions for it.
Mm.
To the point where it is so overwhelming that I'm not even going to touch it. It's like when you find out an anime series has 100 plus episodes and you're just like, ah, you know what? Fuck it.
I mean, it was difficult enough with Sims Deluxe. It's already at the point of overwhelmment. I'm just trying to keep you guys alive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the game was very, very overwhelming in that respect. But I think, like, Sims 4, I just feel like I don't think I'd even be able to sort of get into it. I think it'd be so so different and so geared to optimize it for people who were really into Sims 3 that I've just kind of missed the boat. I don't know, do you reckon it's accessible to new players?
Oh yeah, it's good. Maybe there's like a tutorial to, you know, get you through the first bit.
Alright, okay.
I don't know, maybe there is. Because I remember, it must be Sims Deluxe. I've not played that one. Unless I did randomly play one of the console ports for a bit. But when I was playing it, I think they hadn't yet introduced pets, but you did have jobs.
Yeah.
And that was just...
But you had jobs in Sims 1.
That was just difficult enough.
Base game.
And you have that moment of... God, I'm just getting my Sims through the rat race of life.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just like, right, okay, that's the guy that I'm trying to level up and do things. He's going to work for 8 hours.
Yeah.
I'll just fast forward time until he gets back home.
And then he's really fucking sad.
And tired, and he needs to piss himself.
And then goes to sleep.
On the piss, yeah.
Until you have to nudge him awake to go to work again. Pretty good reflection of life, actually.
Yeah, and then, and then the death comes for him.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Or inevitably, you end up becoming his death as well. Just like, oh, this game. I can't believe I spent so long taking him down the science career. Now he's got more free time. I'm just going to drown him in a swimming pool.
Yeah, I do remember. I think everybody does this as well. I made a whole neighborhood of friends and nemeses, and they lived their lives. Had their baby taken away by social,
lovely
services. Yeah. Grim.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's The Sims.
I think my problem with The Sims is too much micromanagement. I would have liked the ability to just let them do or let them be.
But just let them be, like, and I think that's why we both like Tomodachi Life.
Yeah.
You can't really do much. You can kind of say, "Oh, we're going to the shop now and seeing what's new." Oh, there's an event going on here, but you don't have to, you know, be in charge of the toilet function or food meters.
Or generally try and keep all of the meters high, keep everybody happy, please everyone until you burn out into a wreck.
Having to remove walls because they got stuck in some pathfinding glitch.
Yeah. But yeah, so to go back to your original question, Sim City or Sims? Yeah. The Sims, I mean, I had my go at it. I think I enjoyed it when it was there. I don't even want to touch the latest iteration of The Sims. Sim City, however, I remember Sim City in different forms. I don't know if there was it SimCity 2000 or something like that?
Yeah.
So I remember a top-down SimCity, and I think I played it on the SNES, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So it was just like, here's the power for your city. connect it with train tracks, make more houses so that you can have more people. Now you need more power stations, make more power stations, connect it with the train tracks. And you kept going, and it was fun, and it was weirdly zen. But then they had that functionality just to, right, I've made a good city, everything seems to be running, and the populace seems to be happy. Now I'll get Godzilla or a hurricane or whatever and destroy all of my own good work. It was an odd dichotomy in that game. But I don't know, like, I know there are more... does SimCity still exist, actually? I have no idea. Is there a SimCity?
No idea.
I know that there's, like, SimCity clones, like Skylines or something like that. And they make everything a bit more pretty, and there's more investment in your city, and it becomes a bit more like an RTS, but without the constant threat of, I don't know, night elves coming to destroy your base or whatever.
The last SimCity was 2014.
And okay.
Failed reboot.
Reboot. Yeah. why is it a reboot and not a sequel?
The title was heavily criticized in user reviews, and developer plans post-launch updates were scrapped.
Okay. Oh, was it maybe going to be along the same lines as The Sims, and they were just going to be make that free and you have to buy all the DLCs?
They announced they'd offer a free game from their library to all those who bought SimCity as compensation for the problems.
Wow.
And then Amazon temporarily stopped selling the game in the week after release.
Wow!
It required always online DRM, even in single play. modders determined that the internet connection requirement could be easily removed without affecting gameplay or functionality.
Brilliant.
And then a mobile port was released the year afterwards.
Great.
And then the year after that, Maxis Emeryville Studio closed. We were producing it.
Oh, okay. That was Will Wright as well, wasn't it?
Originally, yeah. I don't know when you...
Alright, okay. Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, I always imagined that eventually there would be a time where The Sims and The SimCity merged together in some glorious online mishmash, and people could micromanage other people's cities and all that. But I don't know if that... Is it exciting? Is it a game? Is it a game, Farley?
Oh, God. It's a classic Richie Posit. Well, it is interesting, is it? Because I was just thinking as you were describing it all, because obviously from The Sims and SimCity, SimCity in particular, you kind of get the... I hope this is the chronological order, but then you also get things like Roller Coaster Tycoon, Zoo Tycoon, Beam Hospital. The genre is still going strong, to, you know, like the Jurassic World park building games. And I drop off of them quite quick. Like, the initial premise is quite thrilling. And then, like playing a traditional kind of combat-based RTS, there is like a compelling, oh, you unlock this, and you unlock this, and you unlock this.
And then eventually it gets slower and gated, like mobile games.
But then it gets to a point where it just becomes really, or I find it really stressful. To kind of keep your eye on all the different things which are going on. And so I did like Theme Hospital, which really kind of is or stressful, you know, very quickly gets stressful. And that's part of the fun, because the de-hairifying machine is on fire, and then like there'll be an outbreak or something, and everyone's vomiting, and it's just like pure chaos. That I really like, because it's okay, this is, you know, this is almost scripted, or at some point there will be chaos, and there's fun in sorting out. Whereas in those other ones, I think it's just all these factors start to compound, and you're balancing whatever the units are, energy versus customer happiness versus something else, and there's never quite, you know, if you never quite got enough resources to build that new building, or I really need to tidy up that first bit of the town which I built, which is really stupid because there's a huge bottleneck here, and I need to, it just becomes stressful. So yeah, I burn out on them fairly quick.
Yeah.
But I think if these, for certain people, these games are, you know, just, this is my forever game, or, you know, the only game I have on my PC is you know, a SimCity or SimCity-like game. And
yeah.
Just what I do, as I build sprawling, whatever it is, theme parks, zoos.
My forever game. Yeah.
Cities. Yeah.
No, that's a really good way of putting it.
But it's not for me.
No, it's not for me either. I'm with you on the whole hyper stress that sort of comes along with it, and you want things to go right. You want to feel achievement. I don't get that from fixing things or having something shitty happen.
It's also at the extreme end, or when you're getting so far, you've unlocked all the skill tree.
Yeah.
Where my imagination taps out at that point. It's like, I can't handle any more of this. And
yeah.
I find the same with open world games, right? Like with Minecraft or the various Minecraft clones. You're like, oh, wow, I can seed a million worlds and they'll all be unique. I just very quickly default to, I'm going to destroy something, or, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you can launch a rocket, and I'm just going to launch rockets everywhere and destroy it, rather than doing something
like Skyrim and the chicken.
Constructive or beautiful, or you know, cobble together a working computer using none of that.
No.
Quickly to a uninhabitable wasteland on fire. If I'm left in charge of things.
Wow. And probably a little glimpse into the psyche there as well.
So yeah, there'd always be a bit on. I think it's Jurassic Park Park Builder on PlayStation 2.
Park Builder.
Park Builder.
Yeah.
Or whatever it's called. And that one, you know, you had to send off teams to excavate fossils to get DNA. So you would, you know, unlock more dinosaurs, but inevitably it got to some point where if a tornado hadn't ripped through, you would kind of, oh, what if I just delete this fence? And then, or what if I set up the safari in the T-Rex enclosure? And then just watch my little tourists get in a safari car and get massacred by a T-Rex?
Yeah. Yeah, there was other. I remember one called Populous in the SNES as well. Did you ever play Populous?
Wasn't Populous very different? Wasn't it one that was set on that really? It almost looked like a sand table, right? Like a scrolling sand table. Had a really weird interface. It looked like it was set on a chessboard, but you can kind of scroll through the scenery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I've had to look it up.
It's,
and you could put it up and put it down. Put up. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Populous. There was another one that I really liked, which probably goes more into the realm of RTS or Borders That Line. The Settlers. Did you ever play Settlers?
No.
Oh, okay. I played The Settlers. That was quite good. No, I liked it, but I think I only ever played Settlers on the Amiga, and I think it was Settlers 2 I played, and I could spend hours and hours and hours on that, like, and do nothing really except just sort of build up forts and get and flatten things and send geologists out. I could probably... No, I'm not going to go there.
This is still going?
Yeah, I know. But it's the Settlers 2 that I like. All the new ones will probably be scary and full of many menus.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah?
Yeah. Far cry from the Pixel people before.
Okay. Well, I won't even. I like the Settlers one, but I'm just gonna let it be. Move on. Your question, Farley.
Mm-hmm.
The Sims or SimCity? Yeah, or SimCity or The Sims.
We need an answer.
We need an answer. I think I'm gonna go with The Sims. I think there was, maybe in later, like Sims 2 and stuff like that, I think there was a lot more fun that you could have with customization and creating people and creating houses and stuff like that. Whereas with SimCity, it wasn't like, oh, you know what, I'm going to make Paris. You know, like, or I'm going to make Glasgow.
Or Raccoon City.
Or Raccoon City. Yeah. But I'm not, I never sat down and thought I want to do that. But I think there was a lot more personal involvement in The Sims. So that's where it gets the edge for me.
Yeah, I agree on similar grounds as well. So I'm going to choose The Sims. Although it's not for me today. I put loads of really fun hours into just managing the lives of my little people. And I think it's a much beloved series, and was a series that was speaking to not your typically thought of gaming demographic before games really were aiming for that broader appeal. Whereas all the people I know who like SimCity were a bit deranged in like an American
hobbyists song,
hobbyists who like everything to be just so and work optimally,
whereas we much prefer to have things not optimal or indeed broken or not even
or just a mess, just a beautiful personally customized mess.
Yes, a playground, like getting the Lego box and just turning it upside down.
Yeah. But what I would love, I don't think this is really happening. I mean, what's the name of that horrible, that massive space game, which sounds really cool, but it's really boring.
Mass Effect?
No, you know.
Massive Effect. EVE Online?
Yeah, EVE Online. For a while, I don't know if they've got it to work. For a while, they were trying to do that, where somebody's paying.
Oh, they did the Valkyrie thing. Yeah, no, it failed.
Yeah. It'd be quite cool to see a SimCity type thing. So if you are the city planning type person, you can look at the big picture.
Yeah.
But then you can manage a little family within the city. I just hope your house isn't in the way of the most optimal train station or something. It's knocked down.
Yeah. And if it is, you'll get like visits from the civil services to try to pay you off to go and make a new house somewhere else. Here's a plot of land.
Yeah. And you refuse the higher and higher offers, and then all of a sudden, they build an ugly skyscraper opposite. turn your water off, turn your electricity off. Yeah. That'd be great, but it'd work on like a voting system as well, so the people playing The Sims would be able to oust the mayor of the city through a voting system, so you kind of do want to keep that just sounds compelling, but also a recipe for somebody hunting down who the mayor is and then going to find them in real life to kill them because they've tampered with them.
Yeah, it would be good maybe if you had like a SimCity that you could get involved in, but it was sort of like AI controlled, and each person had their own family to deal with. I don't know. Like this. No, let's not do this. Let's not have a office conference to brainstorm to make The Sims better.
How to make The Sims even more dystopian.
Well, oh, there you go. Set it in the future.
I said it in the now. That's the Mr. Dystopian.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah. Uh-oh, a new pandemic has arrived. You can't leave the house.
You can't leave the house. Also, you're not allowed to take off your VR headset because you waive that right in order to not pay thousands of pounds. Now you have to wear it 24/7.
Oof.
trapped in The Sims, and then because adverts and corporate pressure would take over, you're just living a slightly shittier version of your real life in a virtual world.
Oh, okay. Right. So we have agreed on The Sims, and I think we have also reached that point. Farley, what point have we reached?
Oh, it's only the middle of the podcast. It's break time.
Break time. Cool. So, to take a break from our questions and answer sections.
Dancers questions.
How about we do our usual middle of the podcast thing and ask each other questions?
Sounds good to me, Richie. I've got one for you.
Okay, cool.
These questions, by the way, readers, are from Ultimate Video Game Trivia, an inexpensive video game trivia quiz you could find at all good card shops and calendar pop-up stores. Faith Connors is the player character and a runner in which video game series?
Ooh. Mirror's Edge?
Mirror's Edge, yes. Did you ever play Mirror's Edge?
No, I didn't. I hated the idea of parkour. Yeah, exactly. I have zero interest in that. It's nice in the Spider-Man game.
Yeah, there's a whole spate of actual parkour games.
Yeah.
Ugh, awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's safe.
Okay, right, you ready? Are you braced? Yes. Are you prepped? Yeah. Oh, fucking just ask the question, Richie. Fucking. In the 2012 strategy video game XCOM, The Enemy Unknown, what is the name of the organization that is abbreviated to XCOM?
What's the name of the organization which is abbreviated to XCOM?
Yeah.
Extraterrestrial Command Office Management.
It's not an acronym, so it's actually Extraterrestrial Combat Unit.
So close.
You were very close. You got extraterrestrial, which is quite good, and then you went straight into an acronym.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stop me when you think you can't answer this question.
Okay.
In Dark Souls.
Okay. No, I don't think I'm going to get this one. You can speed it up a little bit.
Which infamous duo must be defeated in order for the player character to obtain the Lord Vessel?
Romulus and Remus.
Oh, it was close. It's Dragon Slayer Orstein and Executioner Smough.
Good God.
Yeah.
Did you think I had any chance of getting that one?
No, I thought you were just going to stop it after Dark Souls and just take the loss.
I thought you were meaning stop me when you think you can answer this question.
No, it was stop me when you think you can't.
Okay.
When you know, no, I'm not going to get this.
No, okay. Right. In March 2018, Atari revealed its intention to release a new console. What is the name of this prospective console shared with the original name for the Atari 2600?
Is it the Atari 2600?
It is not.
The Atari 20- name
Well, the Atari 2600 was also called this.
Oh. The Atari Pile Driver.
It is not the Atari Pile Driver. Good guess, though.
Yeah, close.
It's the Atari VCS, Video Computer System.
No memory of that not happening.
Yeah. I feel like I follow Atari, and even I didn't know that was a thing. And...
There's only so many times I felt Atari like Sonic the Hedgehog. There's only so many times they can try and come back.
I know, it really does feel like beating a dead horse.
Before you just shut your heart off. Just, guys, every now and then release a compilation.
Yeah. You've been dead to me for so long.
Yeah. Stay in your lane. Yeah. Just don't.
There's no harm with you. Yeah, exactly. Just.
You're done.
Yeah.
There is a really. I think there's like an Atari collection out at the moment, which I'm always very tempted by. Even though I know most of those games are going to be shite.
Yep. And then you'll rattle through them. You'll play the first 5 minutes. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time trying to get good at this game. And then you just turn it off. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
it. That was not the worst break time, but not a good one by any stretch of the imagination. Points wise.
I mean, I got one, which is pretty good.
One out of four.
Yeah. Makes a change.
You can buy the video game trivia quiz. Once again, but here ends break time.
Okay, so we're moving on to my question at you, Farley.
Yes.
So, to give you some background here.
Oh, God, yeah.
And also to date this episode for the readers.
Yeah, for the readers who are putting together the order in which we recorded them.
Yeah,
which even we don't know.
We have no idea. We might even put two of the same episode out.
Have we already done this segment, readers? Is it the first or the second time? We don't know.
Right. So I have been playing Baldur's Gate 3.
Lucky boy.
It's a very, very, very good game.
Yeah.
I am very, very impressed with it. It's also coming off the back of... Like you put me in a massive sort of Dungeons and Dragons lane. There must be a better way of describing what I'm trying to say.
Did you jump into the D&D beef?
Yeah, I jumped into the D&D beef.
Okay, yeah.
I have sort of been playing through that and just really, really getting quite deep into it, and also part of I've got a few other people who are also into it as well, and they're just it's amazing. I'm really, really impressed with it. And basically I want to ask a couple of questions if possible, probably just get one around that game. And also given your previous D&D knowledge, see what some of your answers would be. So my first question is really just around how Baldur's Gate has implemented a lot of the choices in that game. So obviously it is a game which you play and you go through. You have persuasion checks, you have the thingy rolls in what's the word when you first get into an encounter?
Initiative
rolls, and you have things like that. But also, like, in general, it all depends on your character stats and things like that, and then you get a dice roll, which of course you can fail. You have the option, like, if you really want to be a cheaty cheaterson, to save and reload until you get the dice roll that you want. So my question, as a duality, dice rolls or straight up choices?
Dice rolls or choices? Good question. And I might have a few clarifying questions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's absolutely fine.
So one of them would be, can you see the dice roll? As in, not necessarily a literal dice bobbling along the screen.
It is literally a dice in the middle of the screen, yeah.
You know, either that or, you know, you can
and you've got your modifiers applied to it as well and things like that.
Yeah.
So let's say, for instance, I'll just give you a quick example. You have a persuasion choice, chance. If you have, like, charisma to even slightly see that option in the dialogue boxes. Once you do that, you can click that and then you'll get the dice up on the screen and you can see the modifiers based on your current charm levels and things like that.
Yeah.
And if you've got other modifiers from your teammates who can perhaps boost that for you as well.
Okay. Yeah. And can you try anything? Because I've been playing the Outer Worlds, which is a very good game, but not doing anything particularly novel on its own, I think. And that's one of the ones where certain options won't even appear until you have, you know, you need to have 115 science in order to unlock the science answer.
So, yeah,
answer.
Like, for instance, I chose to play Bard. Yeah. So I have options that are bard-only options.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm sure there'll be, like, warlock-only options and things like that.
I think, ultimately, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
But, choices in games... really beginning to start to piss me off. Pokemon does this, like, I'm sure you've clocked it as well, where just periodically when you're playing through the story of, like, one of the Switch Pokemon games, they'll be like, do you want to go to the beach or eat ice cream? And regardless of what you say, the answer will be like, ice cream on the beach, that's a great idea. Just don't.
Yeah, the illusion of choice.
The illusion of choice.
Yeah.
And when you're given a choice, it can be really frustrating to think, like, oh, did I miss out? Or do I need to go back? Some games, I think Detroit Being Human did this.
Yeah.
Where you get, at the end of the level, you get to see the full tree. You don't get to see the, you know, pathways you didn't go down. But at least you can see, I think it's a good halfway house, and that you can see, okay, yeah, the choices led to something different rather than you're just going to give me the same canned answer, which incorporates both or whatever choices into it.
So just to quickly pause on that, there is an overarching arc of the story, obviously, in chapters. However, it does seem like big choices can affect a lot of things in this game. I don't want to go into too much depth in the story because it's boring. But, like, you have the option to just kill someone then and there, have a fight, and then you don't need to care about that plight anymore.
Yeah.
And you can just forget about that and move on to the next segment of the game.
I think we've discussed this before, but do you ever do that, or do you always play as the nice guy?
So I am very, very much going down the nice guy route. Weirdly, though, in Baldur's Gate 3, they are giving you characters that are bad guys. So, like, if you do something good, you'll get a disapproval if you have them in your party.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, right, shit. So I've had to basically ditch all the bad guys at my camp. I have done, like, bad guy playthroughs on Oblivion.
Yeah.
Where I've just been, like, the evilest of evil. But I don't know, I get a lot of when you play the game and you play the hero, I don't know, it's nicer. You get a little bit more of the warm and fuzzies as opposed to, oh great, I just killed a child.
There is often more rewards as well for doing the nice go route, right? But, you know, particularly in games where you can kill NPCs, just, well, I'm just killing off gameplay options.
Yeah.
and loot tables.
Well, yeah, but I think there is quite an open approach. And I think with Baldur's Gate 3, they've done an awful lot of work for you to choose all these different things and also have different options with different classes and things like that as well.
Mm-hmm. I think going back to your original question, I am going to plump for choices, not dice rolls, because my favorite games which kind of give you choices are ones where you, not in a horrible, because sometimes games say, do you want this or this, and you say this, and you know what the choice which you're given on screen doesn't match what the character then does. And, oh no, I wouldn't have done that, that's really scuzzy, or you know, that's not what I intended. But I like the ones where you're given a choice and it's as grey area as possible, and it isn't really a right or wrong. So the Outer Worlds does this. You can, at some point, at various points, you can make a kind of binary decision, and it's not clearly like, here's the bad guy decision, here's the good guy decision. It's kind of, you know, do you want to deprive this rebellion faction, or you know, but what about all the guys who work in the factory? And you're like, ah, you know, kind of sat there sweating, and God forbid there's like a ticking timer bar. Like,
Oh, no,
it's really hard. So I'm going to go for like the binary, not the binary, but the.
But wouldn't you prefer
narratively rather than.
Wouldn't you prefer that the choice wasn't yours then? It was all up to fate?
No, because then I think in those cases when you fail, it's like, oh, it's because my stats are bad. If my stats were good. And you know, you're never going to get. Unless it's a stupid game, you're never going to have like a full spread of stats.
Yeah, so I have been trying to embrace the fails, basically.
Uh-huh.
It's really annoying because I get a lot of FOMO. It's just like, oh, I wonder what the other side of this story would have been.
Would you rather go to Sexy Pleasure Land or do the fetch quest? Sexy Pleasure. Oh, I failed my deception roll.
Yeah, I didn't get a 15.
Yeah.
I think that's what I quite like, is like, so some of the dice rolls are harder than others, and you can like I say, you can sort of boost it. But I did it a couple of times at the start of the game where I was like, I reloaded because I had to know. But then it was just like, you know what, this isn't like this feels like bad karma.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to embrace being the good guy as much as I would make those decisions and within my power. So I actually started off as a warlock, and then I realized, okay, charm and spells, great, fine, I don't want to do this. I'm going to concentrate on just being full support for the other people around me, realizing now that I should have just chosen one of those characters, the sort of cookie cutter people, and went them. I'm embracing the roles and embracing the fails and letting the story play out as it is. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to play it more than once.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only kind of, because part of that is replayability, right?
Yeah.
Did you get this choice or this choice? But if it's a huge game, and unless you're writing it down as well, you're not going to remember what you chose. Or sometimes I've kind of replayed, and then I just don't want to make the choice because it doesn't feel like what my character would do, or it doesn't feel like, oh no, I'm I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do the same thing that I always want to do because that's my character and that's my...
Yeah, I'm struggling to identify what my character is as well as I'm going through it. So, like, is my character actually good or just desperate for everybody's affection? But yeah, it's kind of like you can't please everyone. But like there's a lot of different options to approach different situations, and like the combat's fun as well. And that sort of touches on those things. So you're going for straight up choices.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm embracing the rules at the moment. The random factor, yeah.
Letting Lady Luck have her sway.
Yeah. Be pulled along the story as well as try and direct it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fail a mind reading check.
pickpocket check.
Yeah, apparently I should be doing more pickpocketing, but I don't feel like my character would be pickpocketing.
Is it as stupid as Skyrim when you literally crouch down and walk behind them?
I think it's more right click and then you attempt a pickpocket attempt. Okay, and stuff like that. Right.
But somehow that feels less immersion breaking than...
Yeah, but like you have to know that your character isn't in sight or has a hide or has a sneak factor or has sleight of hand skills and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
But like because you've got four people to choose from, you can choose the one who has the best and stuff like that, which is slightly immersion breaking. Cool. I'm glad that you got over that one. I don't know why I said get over that one.
You're just coming up with all kinds of richisms today.
Just jump in the beef, man. Just jump
in the beef. Get over that one.
Right, my last one. My last question I'm going to give to you. You know all the races of Baldur's or D&D. Are you human or non-human?
So, as you may or may not be aware, recently they are Wizards of the Coast have kind of smoothed out what were locked in racial differences.
Yeah.
Giving you a little bit more flexibility and being a little bit more inclusive, which I think is ultimately a good decision, although it can make role playing a little, because it's more things to choose, right? So I'm quite a fan of, okay, this narrows down my choices.
Yeah.
And then I have less things to look at, whereas if every race, although I don't think they're calling them race anymore, species maybe or something,
creativity within constraints.
Yes, yeah. But if you could do whatever with any species or race option, that can be quite intimidating.
Yeah.
And so there was a bit of pushback against that, but ultimately gets around this kind of idea that if you want to play this race or you want to play this class, you absolutely should not choose this class or this race because inherently they're bad at it because they don't come with the bonus stats. And so I've played one campaign as a human and two as non-humans, and the current campaign that we're playing is like a bloody Beast Wars. Two blobs, a fairy, elephant man and a lizard man. So I think non-human.
Okay.
Yeah. Just because that's slightly better, that's slightly more interesting to roleplay, I think. Although I think playing a human every now and then is good.
Yeah.
Because then, again, you are... Well, it depends how seriously you're role-playing. You know, and I'm not, like, doing voices or whatever, but it can take... Yeah, it can take a lot of the playing a character off of you, I guess. And in D&D, in, like, the player's handbook, you know, all the different rates, and there are so many now, have different attributes and abilities and bonuses, and the human one is kind of nothing specific, you know, and you can't do bite attacks or fly or breathe underwater, but it's more versatility is the kind of the human trait or the benefits of being a human.
You can use any weapon type, or you get proficiency in all.
Yeah,
sort of stuff.
Yeah. Or it used to be. I think you can kind of choose where you put your points.
Yeah.
So it's more cosmopolitan and flexible. But if you want to play something a little bit more offbeat, you have to go non-human.
Yeah.
In video games, I think I also, if there's a choice, I'd also less likely to go for the human option.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I don't really know why. I think, yeah,
got the different aesthetics, yeah.
Yeah, like, you got the opportunity to, you know, step out of your shoes. You might as well make the most of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you say, human or non-human?
I definitely non-human. I have, like, I would probably play a human on my second playthrough of something, but there's just usually too much fun to be had when... Like, for instance, in Skyrim, playing as a lizard.
Yeah.
You know, or a cat.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, or whatever. I hate that there... I think we've had this conversation as well. That there's just varying different sizes of humans for in a lot of D&D.
Yeah.
So you've got, like, hobbits, halflings... gnomes, dwarves, humans, elves.
Yeah.
And just like none of that excites me. It's like, all right, okay, so you're a thin human.
Yeah.
Are you?
Or you're a tiny human.
Yeah.
Short human. Yeah.
And I've got nothing against. I'm not a sizist person. It's just I find it very unimaginative. So I was immediately drawn to other races that looked interesting, like orcs. At least I've got like a bit something different about them, even if it's just the fact that they're green.
Yeah.
But they've got like a bulk to them, stuff like that. But and thank you for asking. I ended up choosing went for tiefling. Do you know tiefling?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I thought it was really, really cool. Really cool backstory. Like Hell came up, and now the residents of Hell are just sort of like this weird refugee race. I thought that's cool. I'm not sure why a tiefling is a bard, but I'll work out their story when I get there. I generally it'll always be non-human, just to try and like I don't know, it's so easy to be generic paladin boy, you know. Like,
and ultimately, of course, it particularly in video games, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you might have, you know, some extra skills or whatever, but in order to keep the thing balanced, you're not making drastic.
No, and you want to try and follow some kind of... You want to follow an RP. You're supposed to be RP in your character. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... But I would. It would be interesting, although obviously really, really fraught. Really fraught. If your choice of race... you know, like had a cultural effect on how you are navigating the world in terms of being treated with suspicion in certain places?
No, I mean, that's definitely the case in Baldur's Gate as well. So I've got a natural disadvantage by being a tiefling. A lot of people are quite suspicious. So like going around and you've got generic humans and they're, you know, like, get out of here, you hell spawn or whatever, they want to kill you. So there is so much that, like, this is what I'm so impressed with, and it's all voice acted as well.
Yeah,
like really, really impressed with the level of detail of like doing this. It reminds me a lot of Dragon Age, because there's a lot of choices that you can make in the dice rolls, choices that were quite similar, and also like the interactions with your party as well.
And how, like, sincerely, how do you feel about being racially discriminated? Like, does it help with the kind of, you know, role playing?
I think it helps me.
Like, you know, well, fuck these guys, or like, ugh, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, or. Or do you just see through it and like, oh man, I'm just being disadvantaged on all so of my roles. All of my roles here. When honest, we get to Tiefling Town so I can buy stuff at
so the, a discount. There was a point where there are some Tiefling people who are like in a safe haven at the moment, but the druids want to get rid of them. I don't know if I hadn't played a Tiefling, if I would be like...
On their side
or not.
Yeah. Interesting.
So maybe that is, you know, kind of is making a difference.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, there's only one first time playing.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, maybe even if I'd have played a human, I was quite drawn to the Tiefling aesthetic, so maybe I would have sympathy. Or my character would have ended up having sympathy in that fashion.
Yeah. I mean, also, it's also the nice guy option, right?
No, not necessarily.
To save the...
So it's one of these ambiguous choices. You're going to send them out onto the road to go and try and find safety in Baldur's Gate.
Mm-hmm.
Or you want to try and keep them in the refugee camp. It's up to you. And you can just... Like, the options... And again, I'm going into a little bit too much detail... You could just kill the leader then and there, and that will overthrow everyone, and then you can have the refugees stay. Or you can persuade the refugees to go, or you're the actual leader who has gone missing. You can go and find them and bring them back, and then you don't know how the events are going to play out either. So there is a lot of choices already. Ultimately, I don't know how that's going to affect me at the end of the game.
Can you also just not choose at all?
Yeah. You can just ignore them.
Could you also just massacre everybody involved?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's actually an option at the start of the game. It's one of the custom characters you can create is the Dark Urge. Which is, which I believe in D&D terms, is the murder hobo option.
Right, okay. Which is how most unlikely, you know, found family bands end up being murder hobos.
Yeah, I can't think of a proper background from my character. Okay, but he wants to kill everything. Great. Yeah. And you're going to be part of a party of people. Yeah. And they're going to be excusing of your actions, murder hobo. Great.
Could you... I mean, I've never had the patience to try it. But can you completely depopulate Baldur's Gate?
I think you can. I mean, it would take a long time and a lot of potions and a lot of...
But I'd love it if you were somehow rewarded by doing so. Like, you know, once you've murdered...
Genocide!
Once you've murdered, like, a certain high percent, you know, some, as soon as you hit double digits percentage, then everyone starts rallying around because basically you are playing the big bad at this point.
Yeah.
And then it changes that, changes the game, and you end up playing, you know, playing as the Dark Lord and raising an army to fight,
like,
the army.
What was going to be the bad guy is now leading an army against you.
Yeah, yeah. Is now leading the rebellion of this, you know, this barbarous mass murderer who's wiping out entire villages in his wake. Oh, that'd be great. Rather than just, you know, oh, I haven't got any quests anymore because no one's around to give me a quest and nobody trusts me anyway.
But yeah, I think there was something in the previous Baldur's Gates where you could kill actual NPCs, which were story required. So you just ended up in the world all alone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the downside to the, when you can do that, is sometimes one choice is less interesting and diverse gameplay, or, you know, no loot, or less experience.
Well, with Oblivion, I think there was a point where you can't kill everyone because I think guards start spawning.
Okay, that's kind of what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, in Skyrim, you can barely murder one person in a village without all the other villagers and the dogs and the parrots and the chickens. And
well, you just need to be good at the game, Farley.
Watching the assassins kicking you out of town, your reputation preceding you, and then you don't so much live as a murder hobo, as just like a literal hobo.
There was times where in the game you're just like, ah, oh, I'm bored, I'm going to go on a spree, see how much I can kill. Yeah. But then there does become waves of enemies. It's kind of like, what's it called, GTA, the different star levels.
Yeah.
You know, finally you get to the fifth star and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to try and hold on for as long as possible with the bazooka or get lucky and get in a tank.
With my iron sword and my leather armor.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm glad we prepped five questions each.
If it's any consolation, I did not prep five. Okay. I shall see you again for another questions and answers.
What's going on with your brain? Yeah, that was that guy's a maniac. Dancers and dancers, questions, dancers.
That guy's a maniac. Ah,
What about me?